Brilliance Audio presents Dying Games by Steve Robinson, performed by Simon Vance. Part 1. Chapter 1. 10 days later. Sitting in the back of the car that had just picked him up from Dulles International Airport, courtesy of the federal government, Jefferson Tate felt a sense of satisfaction to be home in Washington, D.C., although the seriousness of the situation that had called him back meant the feeling didn't last. 24 hours ago he'd been in London with his fiancée, Professor Jean Summer, enjoying their last evening together before she had to set off to Scotland for a seminar on the early years of the Scottish monarchy. Now he was keeping company with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He didn't yet know exactly why, and the lack of information was beginning to frustrate the hell out of him. All he knew was that someone was dead, and the reason had something to do with him. That had been more than enough to get him on the plane, but so far he wasn't entirely sure whether he was there to help out or because he was a suspect. The seat next to the driver was vacant. Sitting beside Tate, on the other side of Tate's briefcase and suit carrier, was the man who had personally greeted him off the plane. Special Agent in Charge, Jordan Rees, the man tasked with leading the investigation. He was a big man, like Tate, but lean and muscular. He was African-American, with close-cut hair and a shadow of a beard, whose dark grey three-piece suit put Tate's perennially creased, tan-coloured two-piece to shame.
"Thank you for your patience, Mr. Tate," Rees said, straightening his tie, which was ink-blue like his shirt. "I'm sorry not to have been more forthcoming with information just yet, but I'd like to show you what we're up against before we get down to the details."
They were 2 miles north of the capital, driving alongside Macmillan Park, which had been fenced off and closed to the public on all but a few special occasions since World War II. It was almost dusk. Through the fading October light, beyond the barbed wire fence, Tate could see the concrete silos of the former sand filtration site upon which the 25-acre parkland had been created. It was adjacent to the Macmillan Reservoir, the vast catacombs beneath it now dormant and abandoned. He imagined it was the perfect place to stage a murder, and if the FBI was involved, it had to be more complicated than a straightforward homicide. The car pulled up by a black mesh gate, which was promptly opened by a man wearing the familiar dark blue uniform of the DC Metropolitan Police Department. Just inside the gate were 2 MPD cruisers, and the lack of any flashing lights on the vehicles told Tate that the situation was thankfully now under control.
"Is this where the man was murdered?"
Tate asked, still taking the area in as they drove towards the first of the silos.
"Is this the scene of the crime?"
Rees nodded.
"Two men were murdered here in the early hours. They were twins."
"A double homicide," Tate said under his breath. Rees gave a sour laugh.
"It's a whole lot more than that."
When the car stopped, they were outside one of the silos, which, like all the others they had passed, was partially covered with ivy. The driver remained in the car as Rees got out.
"Please follow me, Mr. Tate," he said as he went.
Leaving his briefcase on the seat, Tate followed Rees to a tall archway opposite the silo. It had a heavy grey wooden door that was open and hanging aslant from a single rusty hinge. The entrance was guarded by another officer of the MPD. Rees flashed his badge and they passed through onto a wide concrete slope that took them underground into the catacombs, where the sand filtration process once took place, settling and purifying most of the city's drinking water. Beneath his loafers, Tate could feel the compacted sand, still there after all these years, and the air smelled of damp concrete. The immediate area was dimly lit, but further in, Tate could see where they were heading by the lights that had been set up around the scene of the crime.
"Are the bodies still here?"
Tate asked, a little apprehensively, meaning to prepare himself for the shock, if they were. He was surprised at first that his voice carried no echo whatsoever in such a hollow space, but he quickly realized it was because of the many pillars and the curvature of the cell-like ceiling sections they supported just a few feet above him.
"No, we're about done here," Rees said. "I thought it might be useful for you to see how the victims died before the apparatus the killer used gets taken away for further examination."
Tate could see the apparatus Rees was referring to. It was a clear tank of about 4 feet square by 6 feet high, which appeared to have been constructed from heavy-duty Perspex panels, strengthened at each corner and along the sides by a steel framework.